I'm Tyrese Maxey, and you're listening to the 76ers Insiders Podcast.
This podcast is part of the 76ers Podcast Network, presented by Stern & Cohen Law.
Search 76ers Insiders wherever you get your podcasts. Suffering an injury at work can cause physical pain, but also great uncertainty about your rights. You need to retain a workers' compensation law firm that is a winner like our Sixers. A firm that gets some of the best settlements, but is also willing to go toe-to-toe with the insurance company. No settling on the cheap. This is Philly. We have grit and fight in us. Call the workers' compensation law firm of Stern and Cohen or visit their site sterncohenlaw.com. The consultation is free. Stern and Cohen are the official partners of the 76ers. They'll go ring the insurance company's bell. Welcome back to the 76ers Insiders Podcast. Two games into the first round for the Philadelphia 76ers against the New York Knicks. Matt Murphy with Lauren Rosen, and our friend Nick Stauskas is back. Nick, it's been a little bit. How are you? Great to have you.
I'm doing great. Could be a little bit better, but it's always good to see these two faces I'm with right now. I miss you guys. It's been a little bit. But anytime we're here talking Sixers basketball, have some fun with it. So I'm looking forward to it.
And who knows, Lauren, maybe we'll even release the bonus episode that the three of us taped where, among other riveting topics, we talked about our favorite and least favorite subjects in school.
I'm down. I'm absolutely down. And listen, as if we needed another excuse to go on a long run here, Nick Stauskas back in the fold. We got to get this man on the pod at least a few more times for weeks to come.
I'm available. I'm free. I have no job. I have no prospects. I'm ready to talk.
The task at hand, the first round series, second seeded New York Knicks, seventh seeded Philadelphia 76ers. If you're not already subscribed to the 76ers Insiders podcast, please do. Also subscribe to the Sixers YouTube channel. Check out a content day series we put out with most of this Sixers playoff roster and potentially a bonus episode with this trio that we've got going right now. But it's the series, Nick, starting with your takeaways through the first two games that, I mean, national media, local media, obviously, but nationally, it's the series maybe that's the most intriguing to everyone, this Sixers-Knicks series. I called it the most second-round feeling, first-round series maybe of all time, and the games have delivered just going the Knicks' way in close fashion, but they defended their home court. So we'll get into the nitty-gritty of some stuff from game two, and a little bit from game one, but from an overall standpoint, what have been some of your takeaways?
Well, coming into this series, you could argue potentially, two of the best players in the Eastern Conference in Jalen Brunson and Joel Embiid playing in a first round matchup, which obviously makes it exciting. And, to your point, feeling more like a second round matchup. The Sixers aren't a normal seven seed because you look at their record with Joel, and obviously towards the beginning of the season, they were a top tier team, not only in the Eastern Conference, but the entire league. So this was definitely a series, beyond my bias of, being here in Philly and, working with you guys, was definitely the series that I had circled in terms of most excited to watch. And as you mentioned, the games have lived up to it. The crazy part for me is just how quickly the narrative or a series can change. And just within seconds in game two, we, went from coming back here, Philly 1-1 to now 2-0, bunch of controversy, lot of different storylines, coming into game three. So that's the NBA playoffs for you. And it just goes to show you how important every second of every game is.
And Nick Nurse had an interesting response to Lauren after game two that spoke to what you just said, basically, about how if the end of game two had gone just a little bit different, the feeling would have been, we came on the road, we stole a game on the road. Like that saying of steal one on the road to recapture the home court. And he spoke to you about just how close they were to doing that.
Yeah, and what's interesting, Matt, is yes, the Sixers are facing a difficult 2-0 Knicks series lead right now, but the games were so much closer than that would have indicated. Every time the Sixers fell back, they fought back in. Both games were close down the stretch, especially obviously game two. So if you take, and obviously wins and losses are literally the most important stats in the regular season and especially in the playoffs, but if you strip both games of the win and loss column, this is an extremely close mm-hmm. series. The margins are razor thin. There's an argument to be made that the Sixers have played better than the Knicks have in most of this series thus far. So I'll let Kyle Lowry's words replace mine. He immediately, and the being the pro that he is with the playoff experience that he has in the locker room following game two, said, listen, he had nothing to say about the game, about the 48 minutes that had transpired. He said, they took care of business on their home floor. They're up 2-0. Now we have to go take care of business on our home floor. Come back here 2-2. It was simple, measured, exactly what you expect from Kyle Lowry, and honestly describes what's happened pretty well. And of course, it stings. You wish you get back 1-1 and you get to play at home for a chance to go up 3-1. But having watched both games closely and now rewatched both games, Sixers have played really well in this series, despite certain intangibles not falling their way. Joel Embiid not being able to play as much as he would have wanted to in game one, Tyrese Maxey dealing with an illness in game two, and still for things to be this close. Pretty impressive stuff from the Sixers, all things considered.
And we know the stats about 2-0 series deficits. 33 teams have overcome that in the NBA playoffs, including Nick Nurse's 2019 Raptors that went on to win the championship. They lost both in Milwaukee to start the Eastern Conference Finals and then won four straight. It's happened in each of the last few postseasons, including with the Warriors dropping two in the first round at Sacramento just last playoffs, ended up winning in seven in Sacramento. So we know about that. Nick, what are your thoughts on people who say the way that they lost game two can have an effect? Because Kyle Lowry is already flushing it. But there are people who say, perhaps could it be too demoralizing to carry over into game three, and it might be too hard of a finish to wipe out for the next two?
I think it's important to focus on the positives if you're Philadelphia, in terms of not overthinking things or getting too demoralized or too beaten up, you know, especially with, you know, the last 2 minute reports that are coming out. It's so easy to focus on those and get caught up in everything that's being said in the media and, you know, be a little bit demoralized, like you said. But I think for them, they do need to focus on the fact that that was their game to win. They put themselves, they did everything they could do to put themselves in a position to win. And, you know, a brief 30-second lapse towards the end of the game, you know, changed the outcome. But that shouldn't make them think they can't win games coming, you know, moving forward in the series. And, you know, Joel even said it, like, we're the better team. You know, they truly believe that. But on the flip side, I will say this, my other argument is, and like, this could be a good thing, could be a bad thing, but if you told me after two games, Jalen Brunson was 16 for 55 from the field, I would have told you Sixers are up 2-0. So from the Knicks perspective, they're like, we're up 2-0 and our best player hasn't really played well yet. So if you're Philly, you have to know that that's, if you're the Sixers, you have to know that's coming. Like, he's not going to continue shooting like that for a 7-game series. So I guess we'll see how that plays out.
Would it be fair to suggest that perhaps the Sixers' best player also may feel that way and has said as much himself, right? Joel knows that he can put more into these games, and we have not seen him at peak Joel Embiid quite yet, right? So I don't know. I'm still excited about it. I'm so excited about what's to come. I think this is going to be a very long and continue to be a very close series.
I guess the two sides I was presenting to Nick originally was, like, on one hand, if you're the Sixers, you're like, we should have won that game. But on the other hand, and this is the side that, to the point of excitement, you're like, we were right there and we should have won that game. Mm-hmm. So like, you can look at we should have won that game as a negative or a positive, and maybe coming home with the 2 days in between will help them look at it as more of a positive. To the point about Brunson, 29% shooting. This is from Justin Kabatko from Statitudes, really great newsletter that he puts out. It's over the last 60 seasons, no player with at least 50 attempts has recorded a lower field goal percentage over the first two games of a playoff series. And Lauren, who has stood out for the Sixers in defending Jalen Brunson, because it hasn't always been Kelly Oubre, Batum, some Maxey. Just the way that they're defending him as a team, what has jumped out to you?
Some Lowry as well. I think maybe that could be part of why Brunson's taking a little bit longer to figure out what he's dealing with, is how well this committee has shared defensive responsibility. And you ask about Brunson specifically, more holistically defensively, the improvements we saw in game two, I thought, were pretty special. And the offensive rebounding discrepancy that they dealt with in game one to erase it in game two, extremely impressive right out the gate. This was a team that understood where they faltered in game one and adjusted right away. And that was something that the players and coach alike said that they were going to pride themselves in being able to do in this playoffs. So to see the way that they responded, and again, it's tough to talk about game two. It felt so much like a win, right? We're talking about it as though they made all the adjustments. They did exactly what they needed to do, right? Difficult to stomach the idea that it didn't result in a victory, but they made so many positive adjustments and improvements that I would expect them to continue doing exactly that in these next couple of games.
Sixers were up 101-96 late in that game, end up losing 104-101. Maxey, while questionable because he was under the weather, goes for a near triple-double with 35, 9, and 10. I want to stay on Brunson for one more second. Nick, with your background as a professional player, NBA player, the way that he shoots the ball and the way that the pace that he plays at, I saw this going around X a little bit with like a two-motion shot, like his release is kind of in two parts almost. And Maxey had a block in game one that people were pointing to, that the Sixers have through two games sort of figured out how to time when he's going to shoot, because he'll get to that elbow and he'll rise, but it takes him a second to actually release the ball. And you can see it on a play like Maxey blocking him from behind. His pace and how that affects everything and the way that he shoots the ball, it seems like the Sixers have sort of figured it out from the jump on when they watch film.
I wouldn't go as far as say that they've figured it out, because I'm sure Brunson will still, you know, he'll respond, he'll make adjustments, and he'll find a way to get his. But they've done a phenomenal job, as good as any team has done this year, at slowing him down, because this is an all-NBA type of player who's had an incredible season that's put the Knicks in a position where they're the number two seed in the East. So, you know, many coaches have touched on the fact that there's not much you can do to slow Brunson down. That pace he plays with, the stop and go, the change of speed, you know, his hesitations, his ability to shoot from deep, get to the basket, crafty finishes, like the mid-range, there really isn't any gaps in his offensive repertoire. But, you know, to both of your points, I think by committee, they've done a good job of just throwing bodies at him, being physical. And again, the Sixers do have size, and that's something that's working to their advantage with Brunson being a smaller guard. Again, on that part, they need to just continue doing what they're doing on the defensive end and hope that Brunson doesn't, you know, make his adjustments and catch fire, because, you know, I'm sure Brunson's probably watching the tape and trying to figure out where he can get some better looks at.
And look, we're going to talk about the positives, more positives than just the defense on Jalen Brunson for the Sixers, some offensive positives and stuff like that as we move along here after games one and two, before the Sixers come home. But going off the defense one more time, how have you seen this storyline of playing off some of the other players in the Knicks lineup, such as Josh Hart? How have you seen that play out? Because it's going the Knicks' way, but it's another thing that could shift as the series continues.
It's a slippery slope with that, because, you know, to a certain extent, you're like, well, you know, make someone else beat you. That's always what you hear as a coach will talk about, you know, make someone other than the star player on the other team beat you. And that's where you have to give the Knicks credit, where they have had a number of different guys step up. You know, we saw Miles McBride in game one, even game two, make big shots. Bogdanovich, Josh Hart, I mean, DiVincenzo, these are all guys that are stepping in on the big stage and, you know, helping their team get meaningful victories. And I think that's where the Sixers, I feel like, could make some improvements. You look at game two, they didn't, other than Joel and Tyrese, they didn't really have a third guy come in and make that huge impact, where the Knicks have. They've had, by committee, multiple players affecting the game on the offensive end. So, you know, you're not going to be able to take everything away. You know, you're not going to be able to limit everyone to under 10 points. It just doesn't work like that. But I think just not as many open threes for those supporting cast players on the Knicks. Like, that's going to be important. Like, even that last possession, the fact that DiVincenzo got two wide open step in threes to make them go up one, you know, that's one of the best shooters in the NBA this year. It just, that can't happen late in the game. And so I think they can do a just better job of limiting those good looks, but also at the same time, you still got to show bodies with Brunson and make sure that he's seeing a crowd at all times.
Do you buy the supporting cast, the role players play better at home thing? Because I know it's the Garden, it's the bright lights that the Sixers were facing.
I do think so. Personally, I've always felt like in this situation, I'd probably be more comfortable, more hyped up at home. But also there's some guys that like playing into the villain role. Like, I don't know, do the Sixers have any villain type players in the supporting cast?
I mean, potentially, right? What I will say is
Kyle Lowry, maybe.
Kyle, Kelly, these guys got pretty hyped up by the noise in that building. What I will say is it was a very special environment. The Knicks fans showed up. Mm-hmm. They came out, running out onto the court for game one. The Sixers, of course, running out onto the court with about 20 minutes left on the clock. This was including a tip slide, right? So, like, these fans have waited for a while. They got there early. They're there to just boo the Sixers from the moment they run out onto the floor. And what I will say, observing that moment, Sixers were not afraid of that. They kind of mm-hmm. liked it. Like, they liked that energy. They liked that tension that they ran into literally in that building. And I think, again, by and large, they responded to it pretty well. That being said, we know the Sixers fans will bring a similar, special, different Philly-style energy that hopefully motivates the Sixers in another way. Hopefully that positive energy can get some wind in the sails of some of the role players that you mentioned, Nick Stauskas. Yes, there are guys that are that can embrace the villain role on this team for sure. But there are also a lot of guys on this team that have credited the environment at home and the building that they're able to play in with some of their success. So looking forward to seeing that dynamic shift in games 3 and 4.
By the way, DiVincenzo, 283 regular season threes was third. To your point, Nick, Steph was 357, Luka was 284. So Dante DiVincenzo was only one three-pointer.
It's incredible.
Luka,
it's incredible.
He's had a great turnaround under mm-hmm. Tibbs in New York. So, and then in game two, we saw how it ended for the Knicks because of him putting them ahead. And Lauren, game one, though, just to put a bow on it, because Nick talked about McBride stepping up. They had 3 20-point scorers, including Deuce McBride off the bench. But for the Sixers, the way that they came back from double digits down at halftime was the Maxey and Lowry show in the third quarter. It was even Lowry getting an and one while still down double digits early in the third quarter that kind of fired them up a bit.
And the two of them have both had truly a great playoff run thus far, especially when you think about the limited amount of reps that they have together. This is still a team that's getting to know each other, that was getting to know each other in the absence of its 35-point-a-night man in Joel Embiid, right? So now having them all together, they're continuing to get to know each other. I agree with you. I liked what we were able to see from Kyle Lowry in the second half of game two. I liked what we saw from Tyrese Maxey in the second half of game two. And I know we've already talked about it, but he really was sick. You know what I mean? And to be able to put
not
on that,
just in the good way, and like sick.
He was both types of sick in game two. And to see someone that this city and this franchise, no pun intended, has believed in all along excel on that level. You just wish that they had been able to get that win because of how extraordinary Tyrese Maxey's performance was in game two.
The most improved player in the 2023-24 NBA season, the Kia most improved Tyrese Maxey.
And I had some stats queued up,
to
discuss snaps for Tyrese. To discuss how special year four was, I wanted to highlight, as we did upon the announcement that Tyrese would win his first most improved player award of his career, I wanted to highlight the fact that he probably could have won it before. For example, his rookie season to his sophomore season, he earned 6 votes, a modest amount of votes for most improved player 2 years ago. He scored 8 points a game as a rookie, 18 points a game as a sophomore, 20 points a game last season, 26 points a game this season. He has improved so mightily every year. And of course, at a certain point, you get into historic territory, right? If you're looking at these types of increments, if he adds 6 points a game to his cumulative season stats every year for the next 4 or 5 years. At a certain point, he's going to be averaging like 50 something points a game.
My brain is doing the math equation thing over my head right now.
Which obviously, listen, if anyone could do it, it's probably Tyrese Maxey. I don't want to limit this man, but the way that he's continued to grow his game in different ways every single season, to me, he's been the most improved player every season he's been allowed to play in the NBA. Last season, of course, limited in games because of his injuries and because of some other situations that were happening with the team last year, didn't perhaps have as many opportunities to improve, right? Seeing him win an award like this was a true treat.
One would counter the stats you just gave about his career by saying 8 to 18 is that second year jump that, better or worse, people just expect with NBA players. And then 18 to 20 is not a big enough points per game jump for him to have gotten it last year. And 20.3 to 25.9 was a big enough jump scoring wise, I guess, in voters' minds.
It's still young in his playoff year, right? Obviously, 2 games only in the playoffs this season, but a 14-point jump in playoff points for Tyrese Maxey thus far. 20.5 points per game in the playoffs in 2022-23. 34 points per game thus far in these playoffs while sick.
And how much does him taking over lead guard duties factor into him being most improved? Because his assists went up to 6.2 as well. Not just a scoring role. Obviously, the James Harden trade happens this season earlier on, and Maxey has run with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Tyrese still would have had a fantastic season if Harden was still here, but we probably don't see him have multiple 50-point games and just make an all-star team maybe. Like, there were so many different things that came with it. And give credit to Tyrese. He was ready for that role. He was ready to take on any and all challenges. And this makes me think back to earlier in the year, on one of our radio shows, Matt, we were you had Coach Gates, and Coach Gates was like, if I could buy stock, if this is a stock market, I could buy stock in one player, I would buy the Tyrese Maxey ticker, whatever that is, like TM0, whatever you call it. He goes, I would buy that. And so to now see months later him get rewarded with most improved player, and you see him just looking like a superstar in these first 2 games, like on the road in New York, comes out 3 for 3 to
silencing
9-0.
The Garden late in the game.
Yes.
Game 2 with a long three.
That long three, and he went back to the bench popping off. I was getting pretty excited. So it's awesome to see him blossom into the player he's becoming. And yeah, I mean, let's do the math. I'm sure by 2027 it's gonna be like 50 points a game to Lawrence point. So
don't doubt him.
That's just
math. Getting 1% better every day.
Right.
It's a lot of percentage points. The right hand reverse finishes that he's had all season, especially in this series, it makes you think about that last play. Hartenstein, who blocked it, actually said he expected Maxey to go under the basket instead of staying on the left, and it ends up with 13 seconds left. He gets the block, and then the Knicks tack on a couple of game-winning free throws, but he stayed on the left side and didn't quite finish it all the way off like he has so many times in this series through just the 2 games.
All season on the road with Tyrese, it's been fun to watch opposing crowds react to what they're seeing, because you come into the building watching a Sixers game, if you're not necessarily super duper duper locked into, let's say you're a Western Conference, a fan of a team in the Western Conference, and you go and you watch the Sixers for the one time you're going to see them all year, unless you're super locked into Eastern Conference basketball, you don't know what Tyrese Maxey has been up to. You're coming into the building excited to see Joel Embiid. You've heard of Kyle Lowry. You've heard of Tyrese Maxey. You've heard of Tobias Harris, but you don't know what this young man is capable of doing. And it has been such a treat to go from arena to arena and watch people realize that they're seeing something special, and hear a crowd of people that are supposed to be rooting for the other team go, ooh, or ah, like this noise that you hear coming from a collective crowd that's rooting against this player and his team, carried over into, again, the most hostile playoff environment that I've ever been in Madison Square Garden. Not a lot of representation for Sixers fans in either Game 1 or Game 2. And hearing this crowd that was so determined to boo and yell profanities at this team just not be able to control themselves with some of these Tyrese Maxey finishes, with the ooh, or the little, like, did you see that? Like watching Knicks fans look at each other and realize what they've just seen was such a treat. And I really hope it continues.
The Maxey and Embiid stats are phenomenal through the first two games. And Nick mentioned the 50-point outings that Tyrese had during his most improved campaign. Him and Joel doing it three times each had never been done before by teammates. Something else that hadn't been done by a Sixers duo since 1967 was each have a 30-point double-double in the same playoff game. It was Hal Greer and Wally Jones in 1967. Maxey had 35, 10 assists. Joel had 34 points, 10 rebounds in game two. So if
Tyrese rebounding pretty well in this series, nine, too. Yeah. Give him credit.
And that's how much do people talk about rebounding between games one and two? Because it was 55-33 Knicks. So that buzzword in the playoffs of adjustments. Sixers didn't get out rebounded nearly as badly in game two. They made some adjustments, whatever that might be, in subtle ways when it comes to securing defensive boards. Now, with the way Embiid and Maxey are playing, the way that they seemingly have fixed some of the rebounding stuff, what are some of these ways they can improve for game three?
Well, I just think collectively, you know, guys just being ready to knock down open shots. Like, obviously, you know, if you're the Sixers, you don't want to get away from what's working, and that's Tyrese and Joel. You know, you need to continue to put them in positions where they're going to succeed. But as the Knicks defense continues to load up on them, you know, and it is very much a make or miss league, but these guys just need to be ready to catch and shoot. And that's why, you know, the supporting cast is always so important in these playoff games, because we've seen how the 3-point shot can change the game when, you know, role players get hot. And, you know, like you see a Deuce McBride, you know, five threes just like that in game one that makes a huge impact. And
Josh Hart has 4+ in both games.
Right.
He hadn't done that in the whole regular season. Knicks made 16 threes to the Sixers 12 in game one. And that, in some ways, was the difference.
Yep, for sure. And so you look at the Sixers, and they have a lot of players that are capable. You know, we've seen that all throughout the season, guys with playoff experience. And so I think it's important for the Sixers to not panic or get away from what they've been doing, because I think in a sense it has been working. It just has maybe been a little bit of bad luck. But yeah, I think they're gonna be okay. I think me personally, I would like to think that they're going to win these two games at home, and we're going to go back to New York
for a best of three series.
I think this is a 7-game series.
Right.
I'm thinking this is a 7-game series.
I mean, people have been saying that leading up to the series, right? And the fact that, again, both of these games, the margins were so thin, you just hope that they continue to sort of the variance, to use a word that Daryl Morey uses a lot, that the variance ends up on the Sixers side in these next couple, because they're playing hard. Like you said, Nick, obviously you're going to need some more production from the non-Embiid, non-Maxey guys. But what we've seen from Embiid and Maxey are, in my opinion, pretty clearly the two best players in the series so far. They're both on your team, right? So get the rest of your guys going. Get back to some of the things that you were doing super well down the stretch in that 9-game winning streak, and see what happens. I still feel very optimistic about what's coming in the rest of this series.
It's a best of seven. It's hard to, or I should say, it's easy to forget that sometimes in the immediate aftermath of a specific game in the series. So as we wrap up, I wanted your reaction to this post I saw that said, remember, when you lose a playoff game, it feels like you're never going to win again. And when you win a playoff game, it feels like you are never going to lose again. It's the playoffs, wild times. We've lived it in different capacities as reporters, broadcasters, a player in your case, Nick. So how do you feel about that statement that does feel like when you lose a playoff game, it feels like you're never going to win again. And when you win, it feels like you're never going to lose again.
Yeah, it's like I said earlier, it's so crazy how the narrative of a series can change within seconds. Like, you know, you could go from the Sixers being favored to all of a sudden the Sixers are down 2-0 in 30 seconds. And so I think it's just important to always take that step back and just look at the bigger picture. But it's hard because of all the outside noise and the world we live in, with everyone like ourselves having opinions and, you know, pointing out different stats and the refs. There's so much that you can talk about. And I think it's just important to fall back on the work and your values. And I think the Sixers have that in a great coaching staff, a good group of guys who believe in themselves. And I think that's important. That belief in yourself can never waver. You know, bad loss, win, doesn't matter. You need to continue to trust your work. And I think that's what the Sixers will do here.
Can't get too high, can't get too low.
And the most optimistic locker room that I've ever been able to walk into in a situation where you are down in a playoff series, right? You go into that locker room after a really, really brutal ending. Joel Embiid says worse than game seven in Toronto when Kawhi made that sort of act of God shot. To go into that room and feel that it's a group of people that really feels like they're going to still win this series was special. And so I'm going to hold on to that feeling as we head into games three and four.
That 2 month journey that Nick Nurse did in Toronto that year, you did with Boston just a couple of years ago. What sticks with you from an NBA finals run?
There was a lot of highs and lows, you know, a lot of feelings like, oh, our season's over. Oh, we're going all the way. We were down 3-2 in Milwaukee going into game six. And so our season on the line, you know, on the road, and just felt like we didn't have it. Just felt like we weren't going to win the game. And then all of a sudden we win that game. And it was like, that was Eastern Conference semifinals. So we still got to go back home and win game seven. But immediately my mind was like, oh, we're going to the NBA finals now. Like, and it was just that one road win that kept our season alive that was like life-changing for us. It gave us that new life. And so I think for the Sixers, just being back home and having, you know, that home crowd, maybe we should make a rule. If you're wearing a Knicks jersey, not allowed into Wells Fargo Center. Can we
so put
that out
there?
With
all the blue, even at the Garden. Like, I was at game one, and it's hard to differentiate who's who. But when you walk past, when a Sixers fan walks past on the concourse, they just immediately get booed by all the Knicks fans. So
it was
the Sixers fans, the challenge is on to do it in as respectful of a way as possible, because some of the Embiid stuff was a little outlandish from them.
I did not
but
like that.
The Sixers fans do need to be up to the task coming up in this series for sure. So
yeah. Well, I just think for the Sixers, I think, you know, it'll change the whole narrative coming back home, getting a good win in game three, and just getting that, just being in the win column again brings back that feeling of like, oh, we're back on the right track. We're doing everything that we can to win this series.
It's a shame though, because that win that you just spoke about from your personal experience literally could have been the Sixers on Monday night. They could have captured that type of road win that energizes you so much in game two of the playoffs for them.
Well, and you know, to the other point, we did have a loss that series that year in the NBA finals to Golden State at home in game four, which on the flip side, we lost game four to have the series tied 2-2 instead of being up 3-1. And I can promise you, we went back to the locker room and I could tell we weren't going to win that series anymore. Like, it was just, that loss was the one where the vibes changed. And it's just important for this team, for the Sixers team, to not let any of the outside noise or just even that loss, the reffing, anything to dictate what happens moving forward. Because I think we can all see that they are very much capable of beating this Knicks team in a 7-game series.
And heartening perhaps on the heels of that story that you just told, to circle back to the story I just told about the fact that going into that locker room, it did not feel like a group that felt that they had lost the series. It did not feel that way at all. So very much looking forward to these next couple days.
Home teams have been dominant in the NBA playoffs. I'm sure in a future episode, we'll talk about what's developing outside of the Sixers series. I leave you both with this, that Nick Stauskas, your basketball reference page might be one of the most trafficked pages during the playoffs, because if you type in for Jokic, N-I-K, your basketball reference page comes up right away. So you're probably getting a lot of hits during this time, people trying to look up Jokic's numbers as well. So
there's very few numbers on my page. So
I've never seen the two of you in the same room at the same time. So
Jokic,
you got a game to play tomorrow, don't you?
Jokic, but he's only got a couple. He's got like maybe like 7 inches on me, maybe a couple extra zeros in his bank account, some MVP trophies, NBA ring. He's got a couple of things.
We'll have
that
to go to your page to verify that you don't have things. But well, no, I mean, it's a fun basketball reference page. Yeah. Don't sell yourself short.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a long NBA career, longer than most.
There's more teams listed than most. I'll tell you that. I'll tell you that for sure.
I love it. So we'll let you get back to watching TJ McConnell in the playoffs too when you're not focused on
the
Sixers.
Just picking up Dame full court yesterday. It's a tough task.
It was a good game. Whew. That was a fun one.
Yeah.
The first road team to win a playoff game were the Indiana Pacers.
Yep. They got a chance to win that series. They have a chance.
there's some good stuff going on around the league. I love the playoffs.
I love basketball.
Go Sixers.
I love basketball and I love you too. You guys are great.
Oh my God. Aww.
Love you guys.
What a beautiful note to end this on. I guess now I have to say love you too.
Love you guys.
Thanks for listening to the 76ers Insiders podcast.